Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Vision. Okay, the big news of the past week was the markets, financial markets, right? And what we might call the GameStop affair. What was that? What does it represent? Well, on the financial side of the economy, it's indicative, probably, of the top of the financial bubble in the stock market. Stock markets are very nervous the last few days. And if you notice, there's been a contraction going on. Some investors are dumping and getting out. We'll see how far that goes. They're looking at whether this GameStop issue is going to spread, whether it will spread perhaps to other similar stocks. In other words, stocks of companies that really should collapse. They're doing so poorly, but yet they were rising to record levels. You know, GameStop stock rose 1,700%. A year ago, it was trading, I think, at $19, and now at the peak, it was $353. And that's not true, just the GameStop, but AMC, the movie chain, same thing, other companies. There's a whole bunch of them out there that are zombies that should be going out instead of going up. And in fact, the hedge funds and other speculators were correctly bidding that the stock would collapse, would fall, and engaging in what's called short selling, which I'll explain shortly, no pun intended, as opposed to buying the stock, driving it up to astronomical levels, which another sector of financial speculators were doing as well. This kind of churning going on in financial markets is an indication that they are at the peak, at the top, and that some change is going to happen here. Okay, the GameStop, what was GameStop? A stock for games, you know, that wasn't doing very good. Company wasn't doing very good. Too much debt. Wasn't making income, revenue to pay for the debt. Always a bad sign. And because it looked like it was on the ropes, hedge funds, certain hedge funds, were betting that it would collapse. But in comes what's called the day trader. The day trader, in other words, small guys, relatively small, could be some small hedge funds and others as well. You know, it's not your mom and pop sitting at a computer at home necessarily. That's not the whole picture. Right. And they certainly aren't poor, these people. We'll talk about that. They jump into the frenzy here, and they bid up the stock, you know, to that 1,700% that we talked about this past month in particular. Well, by doing that, the day traders, one wing of the financial speculators, ran head-on into the hedge funds. The hedgies were betting the stock would collapse. And here these guys come in and drive it up, prevent it from collapsing. Well, that ended up in a lot of losses for the hedgies. How so? Well, when you short sell a stock, what you do is sign a contract, and that contract would be that in a certain period of time, you would sell the stock. Well, you haven't bought it yet, but you would buy it at today's higher price when the price fell, and you sold it and bought it at the same time. Well, you'd actually have to buy it at the lower price, and well, at the existing price, and sell it at the lower price. Well, the difference between that, you know, you're actually buying it at the lower price and selling it at today's higher price, that spread is profit. It's capital gain. That's what short selling is about. Well, hedge funds do it all the time, and so do other financial investors and institutions. They're shorting this stuff all the time, and they drive the price of the stock down. You know, other investors see, oh, the hedge fund, big hedge fund is shorted that stock. Oh, it must mean the stock is going to fall. Therefore, we'll jump in and short it too. This is what happened in 2008. You know, the speculators, hedge funds and others, jumped in and shorted the stock of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, shorted the stock of several of the banks, Lehman Brothers and others, drove it down to near zero, and made a pile of money. They precipitated the financial crash of 2008. That's the role that speculators do, especially those that are in what we call the shadow bank sector of the economy. What are the shadow banks? Well, they're not your commercial banks affiliated with the Fed. In other words, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citi, etc. Those are commercial banks that take deposits from people. And they are limited to what they can do in terms of speculative investing with your, my money. But the shadow banks are another sector altogether. They're the investment banks, the boutique banks, the hedge funds, the private equity firms, right? VCs, et cetera, et cetera. They're outside pretty much the regulatory framework, and they take money from other rich folks, and they speculate with it, take big risk, because in big risk there's big profits. But when they get in trouble, then they drag down the rest of the banking system, the commercial banks, because the commercial banks loan money to these shadow banks all the time. So if the shadow banks go down, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, whatever, right? Well, then the commercial banks have losses, and then the Fed has to step in and bail out the commercial banks. That's what happened in 2008 and 2009. And actually, they bailed out, started bailing out, the shadow banks, too. Well, last year, they pre-bailed out all these guys. Yeah, they spent, the Fed spent trillions of dollars pre-bailing out the shadow banks and the commercial banks. They weren't in trouble yet, but they loaded them up with liquidity, i.e. money capital, with free money in QE, quantitative easing, whatever. That's what the Fed does, you see. It pumps all this free money into the commercial banks and now shadow banks. And the commercial banks, in turn, provide the money, you know, to the shadow banks and to private non-banks as well, which are also shadow banks. You know, large multinational corporations make a third of all their profits from financial asset speculation and investment. A third. They're banks too, you see. It's all part of this phenomenon, financialization, and what's happened over recent decades when you see this accelerating growth of the shadow bank sector, the destabilizers of the system, because they're not really regulated. And they commit all of their funds to make super profits in good times, but then when times turn bad, they get caught. And then they got to borrow from somebody, commercial banks. And the commercial banks don't always give them money when they're in trouble. That's what happened to Bear Stearns. They went under. Chase did not give them money as they loaned them money when they got in trouble, as Chase had always done up before that. So you got to understand the commercial bank sector, the shadow bank sector, and then all these new areas of investors and money, lending, that has been created because of technology. You know, they call it peer-to-peer lending and so forth, right, in the housing market and elsewhere. Bitcoins, cryptocurrencies, right? Well, the day traders are part of that rise of the new speculator. Well, the traditional speculators are who? They're hedge funds, equity firms, commercial banks, right? There's these institutional guys and the big super billionaires. By the way, you know, data came out, 660 billionaires in the U.S. since last March increased their wealth by $1.1 trillion. Well, how the hell do you think they did that? Not by making masks and ventilators, no, no, or test equipment that we don't have. No, they made it by speculating in the financial asset markets and their stock price and their value of their other financial assets booming. We got a gross, incredible separation of the financial side of the economy from the real economy. We'll talk about that. That's why, you know, the wealthy 1-5% are making money hand over fist and getting filthy rich over this COVID. Yeah, they're getting filthy rich over this thing. Billionaires, of course, as I said. But, you know, there's a lot of them below that 1/10, 1/100th of 1%, or maybe 1/10,000th of 1% wealthy households that are billionaires. The 1%, 1/10th of 1% of the wealthiest households. There's maybe like, what, 130 million households in this country, right? So 1/10th of 1%, you know, are the multimillionaires, right? And the 1% are the millionaires. And when I say million, multimillion, and billion, I mean liquid funds. I don't mean simply that, you know, they own, have ownership of 10, 20 houses around the world or whatever, you know, or factories. I mean the income that's generated from those assets every year is in the billions, multi-billions, multi-millions. Well, this is the 1%. But below the 1% are maybe the other 4%, the 5%. These are folks who are, you know, making $200,000, $300,000 a year. This is the day trader. These aren't your poor David fighting your Goliath hedge funds that, you know, the media would make you think is going on with this GameStop affair. No, no, no. You know, these people are pretty well off, the day trade. This isn't mom and pop grandma sitting in front of their PC making bets on Schwab. No, no. These are people who made a lot of money this past year on the stock market, which boomed, and other financial markets. You know, not just stocks, but derivative trades and bond trades, currency trades. Yeah. They're playing all of this stuff. Yeah. So, you know, this GameStop affair is an internal financial family food fight. Yeah, this is between the day traders, you know, make hundreds of thousands a year on the one hand. And there may be some exceptions to that, the small players. But it's mostly these kind of folks sitting at their PCs, you know, communicating with each other on the Internet, right? In forums and saying, oh, well, you know, this looks like a good short stock here. I mean, let's go and drive it up. And we drive up the price and we'll flip it and make a cat load of money. You see, that's what financial speculation is. It's not really real investment. They call it investment, but it's not. Financial speculation is short-term investing in financial assets, which with the expectation over a very short period of a significant price change in the value, the market value of that asset, with the intention of flipping it. Once the price has changed significantly enough, flipping it and making a nice fat capital gains. And you know, under Trump, they cut the capital gains tax way down, didn't they? They cut the dividend tax way down. So you get to keep more of it now. Another incentive to invest in financial asset markets. So what we got here is financial asset speculation. Investing short-term in a financial asset market with the expectation of a significant price change that will be flipped, sold, in other words, for a nice capital gains. Now, the hedge funds do that, but so do the day traders. They're both investing with the intent of a short-term financial capital gain. They just do it differently. What the hedge funds are doing is saying, oh, GameStop is a zombie. Its price is going to fall. Look at, you know, what's happening. It can't make any revenue, whatever. So we're going to short the stock, as I said, you know, You buy it at a lower price. You know, you sell it at the higher price. It's a game. I mean, and just think about that whole process. You know, that should be illegal. Come on. You know? And that drives the price of the stock down. If enough of the big hedgies get in with all their money capital and do it, that drives all that short selling, drives the price of that stock down. And the more it drives down, when they sell it, the hedge funds sell it, they make a bigger capital gain on short selling, on the price change significantly falling. Well, now in come the day traders. Well, what do? They buy the stock in hope that it rises, and then they flip it, and they sell it. Both of them sell the stock after they engineer artificially a significant change in the price. One just does it with the price falling. One another does it with the price rising. It's no different. It's both speculation. Well, you know, how could the day trader do it? Well, you know, the hedge fund says, this has never happened before, right, in the financial business sector. Whoa, this is totally new. Oh, let's get Congress to do some hearings here. You know, they can't do that. They're changing the rules of the game. No, they're not. These are the same rules of the game that benefit the hedge funds. It's just that the day traders flipped it. And the day traders were able to aggregate enough collective buys to drive the stock up. GameStop stock up. Yeah. How did they do that? How did they match the big money bets of the hedge funds that drive it down? Technology, you see. Now we're in a new era here, right? We've got the internet, right? And on top of that, we got a platform, social media platform called Reddit. And on Reddit is a forum called Wall Street Bets. So these day traders get on this forum, Wall Street Bets, and they say, hey, look, you know, here's an opportunity for us to drive up artificially, speculate, drive up GameStop stock and make a killing. And they make their bets. They place their bets with this new no-cost trading company called Robinhood. What an oxymoron, because as we'll see, Robinhood is really Robinhood for the rich, for the hedgies here. Why? Because Robinhood has taken a $2.7 billion investment from the big hedge fund Citadel Securities. Yeah, they're partially owned by Citadel. Oh, but they're marketing themselves to the day trader crowd, saying, hey, look, you know, we're for the little guy here. Let's come, and it won't cost you anything, trade on my Robinhood platform, right? which is based on, you know, Reddit. You can do it on Reddit, Wall Street Bets, Reddit, Robinhood. These are all new technology enablers. These are technology enablers, which enable all these individual day traders to collectively put together all their bets and throw enough money at the stock to compete with the big money of the hedge funds. The big money of the hedge funds betting that it will fall and short sell. And the big money now collectively, a lot of little guys, big money together, equivalent to the hedge funds, that it will rise. Well, you know, in this battle over the last several weeks, the collective bets of the day traders outmaneuvered the bets of the hedge funds. Now, not all hedge funds were betting on them. Were betting on GameStop. Don't get me wrong. There were some. Mm-hmm. And if the stock price rises and the hedge fund time limit runs out where they got to make the purchase, they lose money. The hedge funds lose money. They didn't like that. As the stock was rising, they were losing money. Some of them big money. And a lot of them having bet on margin. Both sides betting on margin. What is that? That means I borrow money in order to make the bet. But if the bet doesn't play out, I still got to pay that money back, you know. Whoa, then I got to scurry around and sell something else or borrow more money to pay off the bet. You see, margin buying, another capitalist speculation factor here, you know, exacerbates the whole problem. And when you got the markets booming, you get a lot of margin buying, you know, borrowing someone else's money in order to make bets. And you can borrow and borrow and borrow as long as the value of your stock, the value of your investment, continues to rise. You can borrow more. But when that price falls, well, you've got to cover it. And you're going to lose money from somewhere in order to cover that loss. Well, the hedge funds were having to cover their losses because they got outmaneuvered by the day traders and what's called crowdsourcing. A form of crowdsourcing, you know, that's what this is. They all get together on, you know, the forum, Wall Street Bets forum on Reddit platform, right? And they buy from Robinhood, through Robinhood, the stock, and they're driving it up. Well, that's a food fight between financial speculators of two different kinds. You know, I can't get too sympathetic with these guys, day traders, you know. I mean, look, we're worried about them when we have tens of millions of people who are unemployed, at least 25 million still. Don't believe the official number of 10 million because it only counts full-time employees. 25 doesn't count those who dropped out of the labor force. There's 25 million unemployed. You know, there's tens of millions of people who are $70 to $80 billion behind on their rent, about to get evicted. We don't know how many millions of people are food hungry, deprived. We know there are long lines, right, at food banks. I mean, there's some real people hurting real time in the real economy. So how can you feel so sympathetic for these six-figure guys, day traders, sitting behind their PCs, playing the same game as the hedge funds? You know, it's like two gamblers sitting at a casino poker table, right? And one makes a bet, and the other raises instead of dropping out, right? Bluffs, the other fails to call the bluff and has to bail out of the pot and loses money. I mean, that's what's going on. It's a damn casino. And it's no different whether you're a day trader speculator or whether you're a hedge fund institutional speculator. They're playing the same game. They're just holding different hands. You see? And who's got the higher hand, right, to win this thing? That's what this thing is all about. GameStop. Well, what about this Robinhood? You know, I alluded to that. This is a no-cost stock trading company here. You know, it's like Schwab, Fidelity, and Interactive Brokers. You know, these are brokers, see? Another area of shadow bankers. You know, along comes Robinhood in recent years. And Robinhood says, well, you know, come trade for nothing. You know, no stock. I'm not sure how they make their money. But anyway, and all these trades on GameStop were going through Robinhood, right? And the price of GameStop was going up and up. And then all of a sudden, Robinhood that says, "Oh, we're for the little guy. We're here. We're the stock buying platform for the little guy." All of a sudden, Robinhood stops the trades on GameStop. Oh, but not all the trades, you see, only stop the buying of GameStop stock, not the selling. Remember, the hedge funds want to sell. Day traders wanted to buy. Well, they stopped it buying, which stopped the rise, further rise of the stock of GameStop, which pretty much froze the losses of the hedge funds. As I said, Citadel Securities, big investor in Robinhood. Now, the CEO of Robinhood was invited on CNN, Chris Cuomo's show. I watched that yesterday. And Cuomo said, you know, how do you Robinhood, justify what you did. Aren't you interfering with the free market? I mean, what's wrong with people buying stock and the price of the stock accelerating? What's wrong with that? Why did you step in and stop? Oh, well, the CEO of Robinhood says that, well, we had to do it because of regulation and some, you know, requirements and liquidity requirements. It's a lot of gobbledygook, which is bullshit, right? Because if there was a regulatory violation going on, why didn't the SEC, Regulatory Commission, step in? I mean, what gives Robinhood the right to regulate the day traders? What gives them the right? Did the SEC tell Robinhood to do that? No. The SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, didn't do it either. So why did Robinhood go and do it? Stop the trades and help their hedge fund investors. You know, Robinhood came out today and said, well, we will resume buying. We'll allow the resumption of buying of GameStop. Oh, but there's going to be limits. And we reserve the right to stop it whenever we want. Yeah, well, in other words, you can buy some of it as long as you don't drive the price up, right? That's really what they're saying. Yeah. Well, you know, Robinhood, notwithstanding all its declarations to the contrary, you know, obviously was responding to the hedge funds and Citadel in particular to stop the speculation by the day traders driving up the price of GameStop stock. And, you know, there's others involved here, you know, like AMC, the movie chain. The same thing was happening with them and several others targeting everywhere, right, the day traders. But they can do this. The day traders can do this because of technology now. That's what's new, you see. Technology is destabilizing the financial markets and system, just as it's destabilizing the political system. Well, technology is created by capitalism, right? Yeah. Well, what it amounts to is capitalism. Oh. You know, the big boys are always eating up the small boys. Right? Well, here the small boys got a bite in the butt of the big boys. Oh, but the big boys turning around now and they're about to smash the small boys here. Right? When you talk about causation, what's going on, you've got to distinguish between three kinds of causation. Economists don't do that. Right? There's fundamental causes why you got speculation, financial speculation, and bubbles going on. We'll talk what those are. There are enabling causes, and there are precipitating causes. I talked about this when I analyzed back in 2010, that crisis, 2008-09 crisis, in my book, Epic Recession, Prelude to Global Depression. Distinguish between, you know, what were the three kinds of causes and how they were playing out in that crisis. As part of my defining, well, I call the epic recession of that period, or they call great recessions. But you can apply those three-level causations to what's going on in the financial sector today. What's the fundamental cause of the bubble in the stock and other financial markets, you know? The tip of the iceberg example being GameStop, AMC, and others, right? That's just, you know, the tip of the iceberg, what's going on. Fundamentally, it's massive amount of money capital flowing into the hands of financial investors and speculators. Massive. Trillions. Tens of trillions, maybe, in the last couple of decades. Some call that the financialization of 21st century capitalism, and that's true. Tens of trillions of dollars in the last quarter century. Where does it come from? Well, it comes from several sources. One, the Federal Reserve, the central bank, has been pumping trillions and trillions of dollars into the U.S. economy for decades now. Trillions. It doesn't take it out. It just keeps, every time there's a crisis or every time the lobbyists are able to get the Fed or the president able to force the Federal Reserve, Trump here I'm talking about a couple of years ago, to lower interest rates and to engage in quantitative easing, which is just directly buying bonds from private investors, giving them money, taking bonds back, you know. It's the Fed. Trillions and trillions of dollars. That's become the main function of monetary policy in the Federal Reserve, the central bank, right? To flood the system with excess money capital. Well, where do you think that money capital goes? Well, does it go into making real things and real services that require the hiring of real people and the payment of real wages so people can buy stuff? The real economy? No, no. That's not where most of it goes. It goes into financial asset markets, stocks, bonds, derivatives, foreign exchange, etc. That's where it's going, not just in the U.S., but globally, because these markets are all global now. Yes, the Fed is flooding the capitalists with free money for decades now, and they are turning around and redirecting that money, not into real investment for the economy, but into financial assets. That's why we have these constant, ever-rising bubbles. You know what drives up the price of stock? Demand to buy the stock. Yeah. Well, where do people who buy the stock get the money to buy the stock? Well, it's got to come from somewhere. Yeah. Well, it's partly the Fed that gives the free money, veritable, you know, zero interest rates, the commercial banks who loan it to the shadow banks who then loan it out and or buy stock themselves, loan it to their rich members, or distribute it as profits to their rich members, and then give it, and then it flows into back into the stocks. Become, you know, it's a circular thing. Not just the Fed responsible for the trillions and trillions of dollars sitting on the sideline by investors. What about the tax system? Well, in the last 20 years, the federal government has cut taxes by $15 trillion. Yeah, I mean, I documented all these tax legislation and bills and, you know, how much went to this group or that group, you know, in my book, recent book last year, Scourge of Neoliberalism. So $15 trillion, most of which has gone to corporations and investors, 80% maybe, 80%. Okay, so you're looking at, what, $12, $13 trillion being distributed by the government to corporations and investors. That's on top of the Fed pumping trillions into the economy. And then the third factor is the corporations themselves enjoying record profits for years now and distributing those profits to their shareholders to the tune, under Obama, of almost $1 trillion a year for 8 years, and under Trump at the rate of $1.3 trillion a year for 3 years. We don't know yet what last year was, probably less, because they were hoarding them, the money, the corporations, instead of distributing it as dividends and buybacks. But they're going to go back to the buybacks here very soon. Some of them are already. So, you know, you're looking at $1 trillion a year every year being distributed by the corporate conduit to its shareholders, who are investors. What do you think they do with the extra money? Well, they get to keep more of it now because capital gains, dividends, buybacks are taxed far less. So you got these three forces that are funneling money into the hands of speculators, financial investors, the 1%, maybe the 5% if you include day traders, you know, making hundreds of thousands a year. Okay, so all those trillions and trillions of dollars aren't sitting on the sidelines. The rich folks don't sit on their money. They put it to work. And the more you throw money at the stock market, the more demand for stock drives up the price for stock. As the price for stock rises, oh, more people come in. Oh, I want to get on this accelerator here and get some of this record stock market bubble. You know, so more money flows into the stock market, drives the price up even more. So you got this upward cyclical movement of huge stock gains, low taxes, and recycling back into financial markets for more stock gains. That's why you got the bubble. That's why the bubble doesn't seem to ever stop, because there's all this trillions of dollars feeding the bubble. And that's why you've got the financial side of the economy divorcing itself ever more, ever faster from the real side of the economy. So those players in the financial side, the speculators, you know, whether they be the newcomer crowdsourcing day traders, you know, aggregating now their bets and challenging the big bets of the hedge funds, whether it's them or the hedge funds, the big institutions sitting on trillions, able to do it as they have traditionally. You know, it's a food fight between the financial speculators. That's what it is. But fundamentally, you see, technology is only the enabler. The Reddits, the Wall Street Bets Forum, the Robin Hoods, right? These are technology enablers that the newcomers are riding on and becoming a competitor to the hedge funds and private equities and others. But the private equities and hedge funds are politically more influential than the day traders. So now they're going to get their buddies in politics, in Congress, to help them out. Congressional hearings going on now. Ooh, what's happening here? We got to change the rules of the game. Yeah, we can't let these newcomers actually compete with us. This is capitalism. We don't like competition. This is free markets, right? We want to interfere and prevent them. What a hoax, free markets, competition. I mean, this is an example where you have just the opposite, isn't it? When competition rises, they slap it down, right? Free markets. Or Robin Hood is what they did, an example of free markets. I should say what Citadel did behind Robin Hood. No. But technology is the enabler. The fundamental drive of these bubbles in the stock market is all this free money capital due to the central bank, due to turning the tax system on its head, due to corporation $1 trillion a year buybacks and dividend practices. And what we're seeing in this GameStop affair is a precipitating causal factor. See, fundamental, enabling, and precipitating causes. Well, what do I mean? Well, you know, the markets are getting nervous. The VIX instability index is over 30, which means, instability coming here. And they're all looking at what happens next. You know, are we going to have more of this, more GameStops? I mean, it's beginning to look like the 2000 dot-com bust in some ways, when you had companies that didn't even offer a product with their stock price rising for hundreds of dollars a share. Yeah, they didn't even have anything in the market yet, and their stock price was being driven up. Well, you know, it's kind of the same thing. You got a company, GameStop, you know, it's in the market, but not offering very much, and its price acting as if it was growing like a Tesla or a Google. That's a sign of, you know, long in the tooth, financial stock markets, long in the tooth. So investors today, yesterday and today, are kind of looking at what's going on. They're getting nervous. You know, we're getting a drop in the Dow, in S&P 500, NASDAQ, several hundred points. Some are getting out early, right? They don't trust this thing. Will it spread? Will there be more contagion effect here? We don't know. And what happens to those hedge funds taking all these losses? Oh, well, you know, who invested big in the hedge funds? Oh, pension funds, right? Well, what about ETF funds? Bleed over into larger tech stocks. Yeah, that's what happened in March of 2000. I know, I was there. I saw it. It could happen. Well, you know, investors in general are getting nervous, and some of them are pulling back just to see. Well, we'll see what happens here. I don't know. We better be careful, right? Is this the precipitating event, this GameStop situation? No, they don't know. No one knows for sure. No one knows if more hedge funds take it in the butt. You know, who else is going to fall? Because all these financial asset markets and investors are all interconnected. You see, in my 2017 book, Systemic Fragility in a Global Economy, I had chapters that just looked at the changing financial structure in the U.S. and globally, 21st century capitalism, how the financial structure had changed, and the increasing role of the hedge funds and shadow banks in the whole process of the change, the institutions, the new financial securities that were being created, derivatives, just so that all this money capital could find a place to go play in the casino, and the rise of what I call the new global finance capital elite. There's about 250,000 of them, at least there was 4 or 5 years ago, there's probably more now, who just engage in making financial bets in different markets across the world. And with the internet now, they can move their money around instantaneously, which they do. You know, some of them figure out ways of milliseconds investing. And to be part of this 250,000, you have to realize in income, $25 million a year. Not asset value, income thrown off by those assets. Then you can join this club, which is Global Speculators. This is the new finance capital elite. Very rich, very powerful, and with increasing influence in government circles. Well, just look under Trump, you know? Goldman Sachs, investment bank. Steve Mnuchin from Goldman Sachs. Gary Cohn from Goldman Sachs, the head of the New York Federal Reserve from Goldman Sachs. Don't tell me Goldman Sachs had no influence. And, you know, it was Mnuchin and Gary Cohn from Goldman Sachs that wrote Trump's $4 trillion tax cut for investors in December of 2017 and rammed it through Congress, wouldn't even let the Democrats look at it because they didn't have to. They had control of both houses at that time, right? And they just rammed it through in a matter of weeks, $4 trillion, not $1.5 trillion, the phony number they keep giving you. No, it was $4 trillion over a decade under Trump. Well, that boosted the stock market. Yeah. On top of that, Trump browbeat the Federal Reserve to stop raising interest rates, lower them. And Chair Powell conceded, did it. Well, it wasn't just Trump pushing Powell. It was the big capitalists pushing Powell. They wanted low interest rates, which would lower the dollar, which would allow multinational corporations to convert their foreign profits and buying even more dollars with them. You see, behind the scenes of the crisis we got going are the big boys who are manipulating it. And the hedge funds, the investment banks, the shadow banks are there. You know, it's not for nothing that they pay Hillary Clinton and Ben Bernanke, former Fed chair, and Janet Yellen, now the Treasury Secretary, when they're out of office. You know, it's not for nothing that they give them speaking engagements of $250,000 a year for 20 minutes. You see, that's how corruption works in America. It's not like a banana republic where they get their hands in the till while they're in office. No, no. When you leave office, that's when you get nicely rewarded. That's when you can become a millionaire and a multimillionaire. If you do for them what they want while you're in office, they reward you nicely. Yeah, the speaking circuit, you know, the big banks, $250,000, trade associations, corporate trade associations, you know, $250,000 per speech. You can join them. You become one of the big capitalists if you do what you're supposed to do while you're in office, you see? I mean, look at Bill Clinton and look at Barack Obama. You know, they weren't worth very much until they became president. And after they left office, when they got filthy rich, they're all multimillionaires now, right? Not just because of, you know, the speaking engagements, but they all write books. And business covers the publishing company, buys tens of thousands of books, sales, even if they end up being burned, the books, right, because they couldn't sell them. Yeah, they make millions that way. And they make millions by sitting on boards of corporations, token, you know. Every time you go to a meeting on a big corporate board, as a board member, you get $50,000. Oh, you're at four or five boards, meet a couple times a year, right? And each one of them sit there in the corner, don't say anything, have your nice martinis or whatever the hell they drink nowadays, right? And hobnob a little bit, talk about your foundation, see if you get people to put some money in your foundation, which is your slush fund, you see. That's capitalist slush funds. You make millions afterwards. You become multimillionaire. Obama's a multimillionaire. Bill Clinton and Hillary, multimillionaires, all after they left office, you see? That's how corruption works in America. Yeah. So the hedge funds, the new finance capital elite, have tunneled their way into governments everywhere and made sure that the policies, support them. And they don't like it that the day traders, the Johnny-come-lately newcomers, you know, want a piece of the action. But I can't get too sympathetic for these Johnny-come-latelys. You know, they're not like the poor guy who lost his job, can't find one, or get thrown out of his rent, right? Or has to drive up to a food bank to feed his family. Now, these people, you know, aren't the Davids, even though the hedge funds might be the Goliaths, right? Well, the Goliaths are saying to the Davids, look, you know, you got to take that stone out of that sling, right? You're not playing by the rules. The rules say David can't use a sling. That's what the Goliaths are saying. And now they're going to get their political buddies to help them out. Okay, we've been talking about the financial side of the economy. What about the real side of the economy? What's going on in the real economy? Well, big contrast here, right? Commerce Department data just came out this week showing that last year, the U.S. economy contracted by 3.5%. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but I'll tell you, 3.5% is as much or worse than every year contraction during the early 1930s, during the Great Depression, because this thing gets cumulative, you see? 3.5% is massive contraction. Consumption, 70% of the economy, contracted 3.9% last year. And they say, oh, that's the biggest contraction since 1946. No, no, biggest contraction since the early 30s. See, 1946 is when the U.S. economy retooled from war spending, shut down the factories from war spending to start building more cars and washing machines and so forth. So for a period of time, you know, the economy contracted, consumer spending contracted, but it was very temporary, and it was over very quickly. The real comparison is to 1932. The consumption collapse, 3.9%, is the worst since 1932 in the depths of the Great Depression. Yeah, that's the correct comparison here. What happened last year to the real economy? In the first half of the year, it contracted 10.5%, massive contraction. It recovered in the third quarter, 7.4%, so about two-thirds recovery. But as I predicted last March, in a Great Recession, you have these short recoveries followed by relapses. And the economy is relapsing again in the fourth quarter. We'll soon have that data. And the fourth quarter, will show a slowing, dramatic slowing of the growth from the third quarter, 7.4% GDP. It will probably be around 2 or 3%. You know, economists, some say 1%, some say 4%. We'll see. Those numbers will come out soon. Preliminary GDP. So we're really heading for a relapse in the fourth quarter. You know, consumption contracted in November and December. Well, that's Christmas holiday. It's supposed to rise. No, it contracted. We've been having over a million people filing for new claims for unemployment benefits since August, every week, weekly, new unemployment claims. And in recent weeks here in January, it's been 1.3 to 1.4 million new filings for unemployment benefits every week. Well, this week is 1.3. And two previous weeks is 1.4. You know, but all they tell you in the media is, oh, it's 700,000 or 800,000. You know, they ignore one of the two major unemployment benefit programs, the PUA for freelancers and gig workers and so forth. They ignore that in the media. When they say, oh, 800,000, this and that, oh, only 10% unemployment. Well, hell, you got over 20 million people collecting unemployment benefits, not 10 million unemployed. You got to take these government Labor Department statistics with a grain of salt. Most economists don't even bother with it anymore. They just look at the new unemployment claims. Well, unemployment's bad. 1.4 million a week throughout the month of January. Not good. Well, what about the $600 checks they passed in December? A lot of them hasn't gotten into the economy yet. And besides, this is just a continuation of unemployment benefits. It's not a net new stimulus. What about the $284 billion in small business loans and grants passed in December? Still hasn't gotten out there. Still hasn't. Oh, but we got an $85 billion a month trade deficit, and the bigger the trade deficit, the lower the GDP. Local government spending has been flat. You know, you think, well, the government must be spending a lot of money. Well, in certain areas they are, but in certain areas they're not spending at all. So government's not stimulating the economy. Net exports, trade is not stimulating the economy. The consumer is not doing all that well. Where the hell is the growth coming from in the first quarter? Well, it's not. They talk about the housing boom, residential housing, yeah. But look, housing is only 7% of GDP, and there's supply problems there. Manufacturing is about 12% of GDP. Yeah, manufacturing did well last year, the only thing really producing. But now it's slowing. The Richmond Federal Reserve indicated mid-Atlantic U.S. that we actually got a stagnation, maybe even a contraction in manufacturing activity. We'll see better next week what was happening with manufacturing. But, you know, even if they both were booming, housing and manufacturing, it's only one-fifth of the economy. The rest of the economy is still in a deep funk. You look at Conference Board and Michigan, University of Michigan sentiment surveys last week, and people are saying jobs are hard to find and business conditions are bad. Well, that's not a light at the end of the tunnel, isn't it? The Federal Reserve Regional Services Survey show that we have continued slower contraction. In other words, services are still contracting, not at as rapid rate as before. These are all indications at the end of January that my prediction that January was going to be a further slowdown, maybe even a contraction of the slowing growth in the fourth quarter of 2020. We may even slip into a technical double-dip recession. Chase Bank had predicted that. Well, what about this new stimulus coming? Well, maybe it's coming, maybe it isn't. You know, Republicans are doing everything to cut that, and I predict they'll cut that about in half. But even if it does come, it's not going to come in the first quarter. It might affect the second quarter. What about COVID? Well, everyone's happy that, you know, there's a vaccine now, but boy, are they botching a rollout of this vaccine. And do they have enough to follow up here is the question. You know, Trump said, oh, we had a lot, but Biden said, it's not there, right? 4,000 people a day are dying in America. And then we have these variants coming, the UK and the South African, which are not just more contagious, but now, despite trying to cover up, facts are showing they're more deadly. Yeah. Well, is COVID going to be put to bed here by March? I don't think so. It could actually be much worse. We don't know. But that's a factor that keeps driving the economy down, isn't it? The lack of stimulus, or the late stimulus, or a cutback of the stimulus is another factor that isn't, that, you know, doesn't bode well for the real economy here in 2021 so far. And then we have the political instability, which hasn't gone away. Pelosi warns, we've got the enemy within, right? And we got states like Texas and Wyoming flirting with secession. Yeah. Okay, so the triple crisis is still with us. That's the real economy.